anyone who's bothering to watch this all the way through is either a friend, hi mum, or it's actually somebody who's interested in starting a YouTube channel and has always had it at the back of their mind. There's a passion. I couldn't recommend doing it more, because we've all got an interest in something, even if you just want to comment and open discussions. And I think it leads elsewhere. I think it makes, like, as a person, it makes you happier and less stressed when you've got really nice creative distractions from what just life and just sitting on and watching another evening of Netflix. It would have been useful for me to have someone condense, even into an hour, all the stuff I've watched for 20 hours on this stuff.
We're now live, brother. Jimmy, thank you for coming on. I really appreciate your time.
Mate, you're welcome. I've been excited to come on.
It's been an absolute... I mean, we've had some conversations in the background and stuff like that, and it's been a pleasure meeting you and getting to know you. So for those people that are tuning in and going to be listening, tell us about your background and kind of your story as to where you, how you got to where you are now.
Sure. Likewise. And thanks, mate. So a bit of a weird one, really. I actually started in a band like in 2011, and I was going to go to uni, got invited into a band where the singer was already signed, which is mad, and was like, I don't want to be a solo artist, I want to be a band. She fancied being the keyboardist. And so I was like, yeah, sure, okay, cool. Sounds great, but I'm going to go to uni in September. He's like, yeah, that's no problem. Anyway, immediately got signed into the same band and, you know, spent the next 8-9 years, you know, gigging along in that, getting places with like a bit of Radio 1 play here and there and some festivals and touring and stuff. But we never really made a living from it. But it kind of had, it had the things... it had the potential, put it that way. And we had some Radio 1 support and stuff. But anyway, in the meantime, when I was doing that, I was doing other work to stay alive and to pay for things, obviously. And it ended up taking me randomly to a hair salon group called The Chapel in Tunbridge Wells. And they're kind of UK based. And it's just undersells it by saying it's just hairdressing. It's very, very impressive. Very large, like converted three-story churches, chapels and things, and they turn into a real experience. So I ended up doing the marketing for that, and I've been doing that for the last 8 years as well. And within that, about 5 years ago or something, I started doing in-house video, like really badly, by the way. The storytelling, I always got that bit right, and I could create a nice story, but I knew nothing technically. You know, I was auto this on a proper camera with all the things you could do. I was auto on the sound. I had the lighting was terrible. Color grading was appalling. You know, and actual editing ability was rock bottom because I was learning from the start pretty much. But that was the first time I kind of felt like I was getting real creative satisfaction. Even though I was in a band and playing shows and things, I was always playing somebody else's their songs that they'd written. I was a pair of hands. And in that sense, I was like a musical laborer, you know? Mm-hmm. I was just moving bricks around. I wasn't doing anything that was creative. So I didn't think much of it, but I just enjoyed the video part. And it was the main favorite part of my day job. And then years later, I decided, like, I'm 27, 28, or whatever I was, decided, like, I've done enough years of trying in the band now. And we're always 1 year from being the next stage, and it just didn't quite happen. And then just as I left, my phone's buzzing, let me just put this on silent. Sure. What an amateur, you know, when I was on Joe Rogan, I remember to do this, you know, but but basically along came lockdown one, and it was a good time to kind of reflect on what you like doing, what you don't like doing, etc. And video was one of the things that really came to me, and I was like, do you know what, that's the bit I love most, and I actually want to learn and get better and do this really, really well. And so, you know, a few months went by, and sat there on furlough, because all of hairdressing was furloughed, and I was learning more about really the ins and outs of, you know, going online, looking at just things like Skillshare courses, loads of YouTube binging and stuff, but I hadn't really gone out and done much practice. And I've always loved car YouTube channels. And so the reason I believe that you've kindly invited me on here, because I haven't actually answered this to anybody yet, is that I do a YouTube channel called Petrol Poodle. and it's been really surprisingly successful for a small channel. So, you know, I'm going to say right now, it's only got 3,100 subs, which is not, it's not huge, but it normally takes an average YouTuber about 100 uploads to get to 1,000 subs, or sorry, 1,000 subs and monetization. The criteria you need 4,000 watch hours, and I did mine in 6 videos. So it's small, but it also got there very, very quickly. And you know, most videos have tens of thousands of views as opposed to, you know, tens. But so that's kind of, I suppose, why I'm here. But then the thing was, how did I get started on that? And what, like, where's my journey kind of taken me? Well, basically, I love watching car YouTube videos, and I just saw a bunch of gimps on YouTube who I'm like, you don't really say much. You don't really inform. You're not that great at describing what's going on. And you've got a very loose grasp of the English language, and it's your only language. You know, like, this ain't great, but you've got 120,000 subs and you're making a living. You've got really cool cars, but I know where you started, and you did start at the bottom, like, fair play. And you started off with crappy little, like, 25-year-old Fiestas and stuff. So, like, yeah, fair play. Like, you've got here through working hard. But it basically made me think, well, if they can do it, I bet I can. Like, I know I could do it if that person can make a living out of it. And it was just a good, like, fun, creative thing to have a stab at whilst we were all kind of locked indoors. At this stage, by the way, we were legally allowed to, like, we were not far from coming out of lockdown anyway, and we were kind of allowed to drive to the supermarket or drive to wherever. So I'd find a private piece of land, drive there, and, you know, I would then kind of have a stab at talking to camera about my Master MX-5. And by the way, first time anyone does it, so much harder than you think. I don't want to put people off, but the first time you're talking to a camera by yourself, all you're thinking about is all my friends and family at home, particularly friends, not family, really, but, you know, everyone's going to be judging how shit this is and how embarrassing it is that I tried to talk to a camera and I tried to start something, you know, a bit different, let alone me thinking that no one on the internet outside of friends is ever honestly going to see this. And of course, the other thing is, you know, our generation don't really care about Mazda MX-5, but you know that the older generation's like, oh, hairdresser's car, you know, that whole kind of thing, it being like, not a real sports car, it's a girl's car and stuff like that. So I was going in with, like, here's why I bought a car that some people think is a toy and not a real car kind of thing. And I had that worry about being utterly judged. But I decided that I thought, you know what, if I get 100 views per video, it's worth it, and I'll do more for fun, because I enjoy the idea of going out and filming and going back to the video thing, putting theory into practice. So I thought, it won't be with clients. They're not going to be upset if I completely overexpose it and mangle the colors. If I stuff up the audio, no one cares. It's just me. But also, it's a good time to just learn at your own speed. Take your own time for half a day filming, trying to get artsy shots of a car and playing around with camera movement and stuff. And I basically, it took me 4 separate times going out to get my first kind of dialogue right and for it to feel right. And I kept being like, no, I'm not going to put this video out until I'm proud of it, even though I accept it will be shit because it'd be my first video. It doesn't have to be perfect, but I know I can do better. And I don't like the way I spoke here or whatever. And what I would advise to someone who decides they want to do a YouTube channel is do what I did. Go out, have a few stabs. Don't expect yourself to have to get it right first time, because you probably won't. But when you do have the stuff that you can stick together and make a video out of, find some friends who actually watch that genre of video and are close enough that they can be brutally honest with you, and send them a private link. So I did this, and they were like, here's all the good bits, really like this. You got plenty to say, it's great. However, this bit goes on too long. There's too much there. Does that add value? You've kind of made that point 6 minutes earlier, blah, blah, blah. And ultimately, I like watching you. This is from them. I like watching YouTube videos that are 12 to 18 minutes, not 28. It's like, cool, good point. Got to chop it down. But I managed to get it down. I made a real effort putting humor into it as well. And I really thought about some, I thought about some jokes in advance and stuff. And I put like effort with things on screen popping up and making a point, you know, making my joke kind of thing. And I put it out on Facebook as well. And obviously it was first place, Facebook and Instagram stuff. And I was just blown away at the genuine like reception. Everyone was actually like loving it and it was going really, really well. And I still think it's my second most watched video to this day. Jamie, pull that up.
Let's have a look. Call it.
So let's go by most popular. Okay, it's my second most popular video and it's on 59,000 views. So again, I'm not a big YouTuber. I haven't broken 78,000 views on that's my most popular video.
Mm.
But I still can't believe that my first ever video shot on a phone has got 59,000 views, loads of comments, like I think like 99 or 100% likes or whatever. But it was awesome and it was a really satisfying feeling that something I did myself creatively was going well versus I used to always get what I kind of honestly felt was kind of false praise. I was taking credit. I would say I'm not the writer, but people go, mate, the band's doing brilliantly. Well done. You guys are so good, so talented. I'm like, no, everyone else is talented and I turn up and play the keys and the bits I play aren't very hard to play. So you can say I'm doing great, but I know that it's not hard. So it was a really nice feeling. But again, for me, because I started it from a place of passion and for fun, it didn't have to make me money. It didn't have to be the next living or my future career. I just wanted to share my passion and thoughts on cars. It felt like me and friends would have too many car conversations of such depth, but it was on WhatsApp. And it's kind of like, we were like, someone else would enjoy this. Like someone else would get something out of this, we'd like to think.
How did you, just to like interject a little bit, how did you find confidence when talking to the camera? Like how did you grow from there?
Great question. Okay. So first thing, I'm not sponsored by, this is not sponsored by, Skillshare is the best platform in the world. It is absolutely brilliant. And every YouTube channel, they're like, sign up to Skillshare with my code and get 2 months free instead of 1 month and then get a discount on the following month. So I did one of those things. I think I signed up for 2 months for free. And I went on and I typed in presenting to camera. And it was just a guy who was a YouTuber with a lot of views talking about, yes, I know how difficult it is, blah, blah, blah. Here's how to break it down, blah, blah, blah. But that really helped guide because I'll give you some headline tips. First thing is everyone feels like you have to nail it in one go and you actually really don't. Even if you've only got one camera right now, you're talking directly into your webcam or your camera, look, your iPhone looking at you. Just by shooting in 4K and having it wide, then let's say I deliver one sentence and that's enough. The next, and I kind of like, I have to do it in, you have to do it in chunks if you're nervous, right? You just do a slight crop in and a pop, and this is now a close-up. You start the next sentence. You finish that, you pop back out. And then actually, and we're used to this on social media now anyway, nothing has to be a straight cut anymore. It gives it energy. It keeps things fresh. It keeps the tension up. And actually, you delivered it in four goes, and you take the best second attempt and the best third attempt of this thing over here. You can stitch it all together, and you don't need to be a good presenter on live TV. So that was that. And then they were kind of talking about like layers of your sandwich, like the bit at the beginning that no one remembers, the main content of the sandwich, get that bit out passionately, the last crust that no one remembers, something like that. I don't really remember, but that gave me the confidence to understand that you don't need to smash it. And because I was doing a car reviews, I would cut away to a GoPro on the bonnet. So I've just finally nailed what it's like to drive this thing in the steering department. I fucked up three times. It took me quite a few goes. Now I want to talk about the handling and the engine, right? And it would look really clunky if driving all of a sudden I kept changing and cutting. So I just cut to a different GoPro. Now I've got the nice audio of part two, and it just flows. And they have no idea when they're looking at the GoPro shot on the bonnet that we're 5 minutes later. Then I'm at the GoPro looking at the wheel, for example. So I had a friend who was too scared to start a car YouTube channel. I taught him everything I knew. I gave him these tips and tricks, and he went out and he produced some great little videos because it takes all that pressure off. The other huge tip is to write yourself a script that you don't actually have to stick to, right? But what I got wrong in those first, that, you know, I said it took me four times to go out and do that Mazda review. That's because I went out unprepared, completely unprepared. I just went out and I felt the pressure to be funny, and I felt the pressure to do an intro where, and I'd start going along and I didn't really know where I was going. And then I would just, and I just would try again. And I was trying on the spot to plan where I was going to go in like a four paragraphs time of talking. And it's just horrible. And then you get in your own head and you're fucked. So even to this day, if I'm going to do a review, whether I've even driven the car or not, or whether it's a 10-month update or something, I write down roughly what the intro is going to be, the point of like why this car is significant. You know, it's got a lot of praise, but there are a lot of people who believe it ain't actually that great. So we're here to find out whatever it is. Maybe insert a few funny jokes in, and you write it all down. And you either print it off or you take it on your phone with you. But knowing that you've got, should you really need it, in all your power, you've got it all there if you need it. And mentally, you start to just, a bit like a best man speech or something, you just kind of know roughly the points you're going to make and how you make them. It doesn't really matter once you're there and you're flowing.
Mm.
That makes a huge difference. And particularly if you're with someone, one person whose car it is, or a friend that you're doing the thing with, they can be looking and reading and they'll go, oh, that was fantastic. Great take. You did forget to mention that bit where. And you're like, ah, yes, I forgot to mention that. Let me do another take. I'm going to include it. So it's quite good for keeping you on track. And it's just a good confidence thing. And the final tip I'd give is to talk to the camera like it's a best friend or a really good friend who doesn't know anything about the subject. And now that you're looking at the person, you're picturing that mate of yours, and I say to people, if I'm doing video work professionally and I've got a nervous corporate person, I say, because they're like trying to talk about why their bank's clever and different, and they're starting to really fuck up and get their own heads. I'm like, right, now imagine you're at the pub with me. You're at the pub, we're holding a pint each. I've just said to you, I know nothing about banking. Why is your bank any different to the next? Now tell me. And they go, oh, that's so much better. And then all of a sudden they loosen up and they just flow. Mm. You know, it's getting your head in that space instead of like, I'm talking to a camera and there's 1,000 people behind the lens. Because
what if you're what if you're someone like me who doesn't have any friends?
I would say, imagine it's one of the girls' DMs that you've been sliding into and they're not replying, and now you really, really want their attention. They've blocked you, but you found a way to talk to them.
I'm still trying to sell myself.
yeah. Like, you send them a bank transfer, like, please unblock me with the reference, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's not creepy at all, right?
There's a will, there's a way.
How did you come up with the name for like the channel, and maybe what would you recommend for other people as well who are looking to name their channels like a certain subject, I don't know, yeah, cards or whatever?
Okay, well, that's a good question. And the funny thing is, that's actually relevant to a conversation I was having today with a friend who wants to start a channel where he just time lapses to music. He doesn't even talk. He just wants to have a time lapse camera of him assembling a giant Lego set. Right. And just thought it's quite chill. Yeah. Like, have a bit of chill music on and you just watch on the TV, have it on the background. You just watch this, like a huge thing being built, start to finish, sped up, whatever, or helping people who get a bit stuck or something. I thought that's cool. So we've been talking about channel names. I wanted it to be memorable. It's not so obvious now, but when I started the channel, I had bigger, curlier hair, like a little bit afro-y. So that was the curly poodle reference. And I was thinking, it was genuinely a friend who, when we were spitballing names, he came up with, I might say like petrol something. I was like petrol something or whatever. And he was like petrol poodle because you curly. And I was like, I love that because phonetically it just works. Petrol poodle. There's so many people that already just do a pun on something, like car talk with T-O-R-Q-U-E or whatever it is. And there'll always be someone that's trying like a slightly different pun on something. And you just get so many similar channels with that. Or you get name on cars because they've all copied Chris Harris on cars or something, you know? Mm. So I kind of didn't want to be that person. But at the end of the day, it's not too essential. It's not that important. Like, I think about YouTubers who are at 12 million views. Mr. Who's the Boss? He does phone reviews, a bit gadgets. Phone reviews, Mr. Who's the Boss? What does that fucking mean? It means nothing. And it's not important either. But I guess it's slightly memorable. Mm. Nothing to do with the subject. And my friend Sam was saying, he was saying like, oh, I want it to be a name that people like, it'd have to have bricks in it because people search for bricks to do with Lego. And I was like, YouTube is not going to suggest you because your name has bricks in it. Like that's not YouTube's not that dumb. And it's algorithms. It's cleverness. It's you look for a certain topic and this channel does that topic really well. And it's all about the algorithm. So I wouldn't put too much importance on it. There are some people whose name will just be like, you know, like Sam Kenkum. They're just the name. And then you go to their channel when they review gadgets or Android things or whatever. Like, you know, I wouldn't put too much pressure on it. Maybe think about how a logo would look. But if you want to just be a person talking about something, you can just be a person and be known for that, really.
How would, like going from that, say someone has created, like obviously you've said channel name relevance isn't like a massive thing. Obviously, it's great if someone does nail the name, that's cool. How would they like grow their audience still? Because obviously, if they're not maybe necessarily in that, their name's whatever, but they're talking about gardening and their name's Cliff Jumper or something. I don't know, whatever.
Sure. I think it has to have a slight relevance to it, but I think... So I think okay, what I would say to that question overall is you're going to grow it by having really good engaging content, regardless of your name. It has to be the thing that when ultimately YouTube gets to a stage where it starts to learn and work out who your audience is, and that's hopefully because you've had a bit of growth already, but we'll come back to this. It starts suggesting you to people and then seeing it's testing for itself what kind of audiences do like this content. So of the first, let's imagine this, right? The first 100 people that watch your video, there's 20 of them who watched for 35%, 40% of the video, 10% who watched all the way. Now YouTube is looking at those accounts and going, well, these guys like fight videos. These guys like Joe Rogan things about conspiracy theories, or these guys like fitness or whatever. These guys like cars or these girls or whatever. And once it's starting to try and work that out, it's then going to test on a slightly wider circle, you know, expand it a little bit. And it's starting to go off of slight variations of the people like that. And it's just trying to work out, but it takes a bit of time. So my advice to my friend Sam was, don't just put this out on Facebook to every Tom, Dick and Harry. Because whilst you might get 100 mates on Facebook go check you out, they've all got totally different interests on YouTube. So all you're doing is confusing the hell out of the YouTube algorithm so that you have 100 views and 20 mates who've hit like. It's not as simple as the most liked things just get shared around anymore. The like system, I think, really is there for you to tell YouTube what you're into, so it will find you stuff that's like that again. So what I've done is, and what my advice is to anybody on starting a YouTube channel, is go and join a Facebook community group or a forum of the interest. So for his, it's Lego. There'll be Lego building Facebook groups. There's Facebook groups for everything. Hmm. So go on there. You know all these people are into Lego shit, and they're probably the kinds of people that have been on YouTube if they're in a Facebook group. Now say, hi guys, I've started a Lego building channel. I'd love a bit of feedback. Like, you know, obviously it's my first one, so tell me what you do like, tell me what's working, tell me what's better, how I could improve it. And you'll find there's a really decent amount of people that will actually come forward and help. But also, critically, they're more likely to watch it through for a long time, tell YouTube that it's worth watching for a while. They might drop it a like if they actually did like it. They might leave a comment on the video. And they're, as I say, crucially, they're the people who are the right people for the algorithm. And it's about getting that. So for me, I used to join the owner's group of a car I didn't own. And I'd be like, guys, I finally got to drive this car. I'm a small YouTube channel. I had an absolute blast. Loved it. There were bits I criticized, you know, but obviously this is me just getting my first impressions in an hour. Like, was I right? Was I wrong? Like, what did I miss? And let me know what you think. And people who love their car want to see a video about their car, you know, and they're also quite interested to say, like, did this guy get the car right based on his first shorthand impressions? And they're typically petrol heads. So they watch. So I've done that for the first, I don't know, 6-7 videos. And once the channel started taking care of itself, views wise, I didn't bother doing that anymore. And I just trusted that I put it out. I barely promoted it. I promoted it on the dedicated Petrol Poodle Instagram page, you know, account or whatever. And I know those people will then see it and go check it out. But I don't really put it on my personal Facebook so much anymore. Or if I do, I know it's only the petrol head mates of mine that will bother watching. So that's my kind of advice to having it grow.
Yeah. I suppose that's right though, isn't it? Like to harness your niche and then to kind of get into that community group and ask for feedback and stuff like that. Because as you said, like YouTube is smart. If I send it to, like if I sent this podcast to 500 people and they all viewed it, but some of them, like over half of them, weren't interested in the subject and they all just fobbed it off and was like, after 4 minutes, like, eh, this is rubbish. It's not really ideal in the algorithm standpoint, because YouTube then looks at that video as kind of like a, well, it's not offering a certain.
No.
Do you know what I mean? I think I'll be right in saying that.
It's probably, yeah, you're right. You're right. And I think it, if anything, it's a detriment, because it just gave a higher percentage of people who bailed on the video early. And it kind of also confused the algorithm for the kind of people that click on it in the first place. So I'd say get that right. But my other thought, actually, around starting a YouTube channel is to do it from a place of pure passion and to be yourself and to not be, don't just look at other people, look at what they do and copy the, what's up, guys? Welcome to that. We're going to do better. Blah, blah. You know, like the more you step away from your authentic self, the more you just become a shit, unpracticed clone of that YouTube gimp that we've all seen loads of times anyway. You don't feel like yourself. You feel like you have a facade to keep up and the audience doesn't connect with you. And I think the answer is, if you look at my second ever video, if you look at my second video, this Renault Clio 1821, it's my least favorite video. But the reason I've kept it on there, because funnily enough, not my fault, but the first thing I do is stuff the car into a hedge. Because the guy who's like, yeah, hop in, he left the car in gear and didn't tell me, A, he left it in gear, but B, he left it with the handbrake off. And I never, why would you leave the car in gear with the handbrake off? You do it as like a fail safe for if your car rolls down the hill backwards, yeah. Right? So there's no, you're not expecting that. Because it's an old French car, I thought, right, I'll turn the engine on and just let it warm up before I use it. You know, just to be kind, mechanically kind to it. So I wasn't even in the car and I turned the engine on. The car drove away from me, just drove into a bush. And obviously, like, it made for a great, hilarious start of the video. And everyone I know, even if they're not into cars, they're like, have you seen Jimmy's Clio stuffed into the bush? It's such a funny, like, thing. So I've kept it up for that reason. But the reason I don't like it is that I felt the pressure from the first video that did so well, and I did put a lot of time and effort and thought into the jokes and stuff. I felt the need to try and be really funny in the second one. I didn't want it to fall short because I had all these, like, people, friends of mine, colleagues and stuff, like hairdresser girls who are like 23, who are like, I was pissing myself laughing at your video. I can't wait for the next. So I felt like, well, you're not going to be here for the cars. A bit like Top Gear in the end, trying to become entertainment instead of cars.
Yeah.
So I was then putting this pressure on. And I wrote some shit jokes in there and stuff. And somebody wrote in the comments, stop trying to be like Clarkson. I think it was only one hater, right? But I kind of thought, I think you're right. Like, you've kind of detected this isn't quite the real me. And I'm looking back like, I'm not fully happy with that. And that's the video with the lowest retention, the lowest views, the most dislikes. And what I say about the car and the rest of it is actually good and it's fine. The videography is better than the first video. I'm using a nice camera, not a phone. I've got artsy shots in there. The music editing is all like, you know, everything's like bang on and all the rest of it. But the audience could tell I wasn't being myself. And from that point onwards, I went back to just really the people you like on YouTube are the ones that you feel like if you met them off camera, I hope they're exactly the same. And they probably are. So I thought, just have trust that even if you're a bit of a sad loser like me and you go the long way about explaining something and you get into the nitty-gritty details, you're probably going to bond with a smaller group of people who really get you and really love the content. It's not about trying to get a million views by just being like Mr. Generic. I think build a community, which is the nicest part of the whole thing, by the way. It's just the lovely comments you get from people who come back time and time again are just so lovely. It's how much they love watching, or you're the reason I bought this car and I absolutely love it. Like, thank you so much again. And it's such a rewarding thing that the time and effort I put into it did actually make a difference for this person and this person. So I say, like, to start a YouTube channel for fun, doesn't have to go anywhere, but it's the most creative and satisfying thing. I really, really enjoy it. I mean, I'm sure you do the same thing. Like, it's not even so much about the numbers. It's like, instead of just going out and playing football with mates on a Thursday or doing a different hobby or whatever, it's kind of like your own little hobby. It's fun. It's creative. Like, being in the editing, you know, editing it on the computer and stuff and sticking it all together and finding the right music and seeing it all come together and, you know, coming back.
I'm all about the numbers, mate. I'm all about the numbers.
but I feel like the rest of it follows. I do feel not, it doesn't necessarily follow, it does require thought. But it's really satisfying. It's very creative. And genuinely, the bit I didn't finish saying, like, what I do is because I started doing that YouTube channel for fun and practicing and learning, I put these videos out and some people I knew who are professionally video producers, they knew that I had the right eye, the right storytelling brain, the right basic to intermediate understanding of video principles. And they were like, you know, oh, I've got this job that's just come up. I need a third shooter. There's going to be this person getting this on a big expensive $5,000 camera, this person getting this. And can you bring your gear, borrowed work camera worth £700 and a cheap lens? Come along and I just need you to get B-roll shots of, like, you know, in a giant apple orchard, people picking apples and tractors and stuff, right? But it allowed me to go and get work because I had essentially an enthusiastic portfolio that otherwise is very hard to build up. Why would anyone trust you on a video job early on?
Yeah.
And that's kind of now where I am today, is that I am more so a freelance videographer, but I'm now, you know, we're just negotiating the nitty gritty details, but basically it's about 2 days a week next year, you know, for a period of time that I'm going to be still doing the day job, I think, flexibly, which, by the way, is video and photo anyway, and graphic design. So I'm happy with that. It'll be great. But now I'm going around and doing all sorts of things and shooting for NME and McLaren and, you know, doing like these conferences abroad for a week and stuff like that.
Balling,
so it's all accelerated at a speed I never dreamt it would. And I think it's such a fun industry to be in because it was only 2 years ago I was sat in the lockdown watching YouTube videos with a borrowed camera and a borrowed lens. And I'd spent £150 on my first mic and it felt like the world's biggest life investment. Just spending £150 for a hobby that wasn't going to make you money back felt like weird. You know, and now it's got to a place, you know, where it's like professionally what I do. And it's just mad. It's mad.
I was going to say, yeah, as mad. Well, because you're touching on the price of things, it's like, what sort of budget would you say people need to get started? And, like, obviously, how would that differ doing it on a professional sort of level?
Well, this is the most important thing. I'm really glad you asked this because I did write this down as something to cover, but I've got a list here I haven't even looked at. The first thing is, it is sound is key, lighting is key next. Actual video quality is last, and story slash why someone's watching the video. If you're going to do how to's, you don't need a story, but you know, that's the most important thing, really. So then, to answer your question, all of us have a phone, and think about it. Would you listen to this podcast in the car if it was recorded on a phone using the phone's mic from the other side of the room? Absolutely not. It's game over. Would you watch a YouTube video of someone shouting at you across the car park, like at the phone? No. Even though it looks spectacular, if the sound is gammy, it's over. So, whereas 4K on a phone, 1080p on a phone with good sound, absolutely fine. Today's phones are actually amazing anyway. So for me, the first thing I bought was a Rode Wireless Go. And the nice thing about that is you have a little receiver, you buy the phone adapter, goes straight into your phone, you use an app on your phone which you can monitor sound levels bouncing up and down, and you've got a little wireless Bluetooth lav mic that can clip straight onto your collar. And that just gives nice high quality-ish, you know, like in the scheme of things, it's not, but it's absolutely fine for 99% of people and audiences anyway. So that was 150 quid for one of those. And that was what allowed my channel straight away to be watchable for 15 minutes at a time, because I thought about audio and I was using a phone on a gimbal. If you want to go out, like I did for cars, for example, and you want to go out and get cool shots of things, next best investment is a gimbal, because that's 50 quid used or 80 quid new. And if you don't know what a gimbal is, it's that weird, crazy gyroscopic stabilizer. So you could have a phone here, right? And you can be twisting your wrist and moving around left and right and up and down, and the phone is sat completely still. So then you can do really nice gentle pan shots and you get really smooth footage and it's not shaking around all over the place. And that gives your video production a smoother, nicer feel. But I'd say, if you're going to be indoors, talking to camera, talking about a passion subject, making something, whatever it is, a phone is fine. Two phones, even better. Like, borrow someone else's phone in the house whilst you film for an hour. You know, put it in flight mode. Have two cameras to cut between. Because also, you can screw up your lines if you want and cut between them, and everything flows just fine. But no one has an idea that you even had to keep doing several takes versus looking straight down the camera anyway. Sound is good, 150 quid. Again, you can go even cheaper. If you're really on a budget, but you're passionate, buy a 30 quid lav mic, which is a little, the tiny mics you see, which are attached to people's collars on TV. Buy a wired lav mic that goes straight into the phone, 30 quid. I picked mine because it gave me the ability to put a phone on a tripod and then stand miles away from the phone, walking around a car, talking about it.
Yeah.
You don't even need that option. Then light, obviously, like if something looks really, if you're relying on overhead lighting or window lighting that's constantly changing, it just looks crap. And you can make, if you know your way around light, again, budget, go on Facebook Marketplace, look at people who are selling lights. There's always some, you can pick up a whole lighting set, an old photography lighting set for 50 quid. And it's not rocket science. It's not the best thing in the world either, but it would bloody do the job. And go on YouTube, look up how to light an interview, for example. You'll quickly learn the principles of one light over here casting shadow across the cheek, like here, like a little bit. Another one, maybe a tiny bit of fill over there. And like I've got in this pretend background, you know, you've got all your light kind of illuminating things behind you. All of a sudden, it's a satisfying, lovely shot to see, and it's being shot on a phone versus having a 7 grand camera and a terribly lit room with bad sound. Like, it's a complete waste of money if you prioritize the wrong things. So you can get started on a budget, and really, like, you could still arguably still spend a few hundred quid on a really old camera that does 1080p, 25 frames a second for talking head stuff, and with a nice enough lens on it, and you'd be fine for ages, and it would make you look much higher quality than a phone. If you really need it, for depending on the kind of channel you're doing, then I would invest probably in total, I'd probably go for like a grand, get a 500 quid camera body and spend £500 on really nice lenses for that kind of cheaper camera. And it's all in the lenses where things start to look beautiful more than the camera body. So just that's kind of.
I think as you grow, you get that upgrade. Anyways, do you know what I mean? Like things start coming. I remember my first ever podcast. Like I was sitting there with these £15 headphones on, with a wired connection into my PC, with a £10 microphone, and the shittiest camera, like little 1080p camera that weren't 1080p. Like I had to twist the lens to like focus it. It's an absolute nightmare. And then obviously, like for me, my channel's not excelling massively. I'm not making any money from it whatsoever in views and stuff like that. But because it's a hobby of mine, I've invested in microphone, earphones, lighting that you recommended, a new webcam. I'm using my mobile, like all these different things. My PC, you know, that's cost me an absolute bomb, but I do gaming and stuff like that. But I think that's like an important thing is just that, like to get started, you don't need a massive amount of money. The content and the audio quality is what's going to shine. And then as you progress from there, like obviously, you know, you could have the best setup in the world, but if you can't talk about what you're talking about and it's shit and not engaging, then you ain't getting anywhere, are you?
No, exactly. And funnily enough, on that point, about when to make a jump to better gear, I've been talking to a friend of mine who's a photographer. He's a Hastings-based photographer. He's, you know, he's 21. He's really, really good. He's really good. And he gets fantastic results out of APS-C cameras. And basically, put it this way, they're fantastic, they're great, but full frame is the standard, like this industry standard for bigger productions and things. And it's, even though it shouldn't, and everyone in the industry kind of knows you can get amazing results with these APS-Cs, you still automatically kind of peg, like a lot of people would peg them down a little bit for not having like the industry standard. And it's silly because there's all this debate about whether you really know the difference or not. But I kind of encourage him the other day to make the jump in the investment in himself and go for this more expensive full frame setup. Because when I did it, and it's fine, you couldn't afford to do it straight away. I couldn't. But when I did it, I actually felt more professional. I felt like when I'd start getting inquiries, oh, mate, are you free for this job? What gear have you got? When you respond with, I've got this really nice lens, I've got a decent body, you know, like, and my camera, you know, like the, you know, like, so I've got two cameras, both on finance, by the way, but, you know, they're £2,500 each for the body. And you think, fuck me. Like, I remember spending 150 quid on that bike for my YouTube channel. And sweating about that. And now 150 quid a month, every month, is what's coming out of my account to finance these cameras. But it reminds you, it makes you feel, I am professional, I'm good at this, and you can go to jobs and you get more from it. So in a way, downscaling it to what's appropriate for a YouTube channel, in your case, you know, you don't feel like you're doing this amateurly now. Like you've got a really nice mic, you've got good lights, you've got a good setup, you've got a good like logo and a better brand presence than you had when you first started. And it makes you feel more excited about doing what you do. It doesn't make you feel as amateur. And the more that you are confident in yourself and confident and enjoy, and you're enjoying doing it because you've actually spent a little bit of like treat yourself money on stuff, I think that's the kind of stuff that does make you come back and it will grow.
We should start our own little podcast together called the Lack of Effort Podcast, and we'll just get the shittest gear. I'm like sitting in my boxers on my bed, you know, just with the camera on, drinking tea, just like, all right, yeah, how are you, mate? You all right? Yeah, you good?
Oh, I'm cool. Just scrolling through other people's ideas on TikTok, and I'm going to try and steal them for the podcast. You know, just still doing it live, just not bothering to be unique or special. But yeah, I wouldn't try. I wouldn't listen to me too much and go insane on investing stuff way too early. But if you've got a bit of cash and you start to get excited about it and you can see dual usage, you know, a friend of mine is starting a blog. He's really excited to start a blog about golden retrievers and dogs because he's got one and he's loved the whole journey and he wants to share his advice to other people thinking of getting their first dog/golden retriever. And he was going to take, you know, probably still is, but but said he was going to take photos on his iPhone and stuff for these dogs and whatnot. And then he was going to start a YouTube channel eventually to go alongside with the blogs. And I was like, okay, put it this way. Someone coming to visit your blog is going to immediately feel it's amateur because all the pictures are taken from phones. They're not going to think this is a well-established blog that's been around. So now you're going to have a much higher bounce rate. People aren't going to stick around because it looks amateur. There are those who just enjoy the storytelling and they don't mind it's a phone picture. But if you go onto a blog and you see really beautiful photos, all taken in auto, by the way, don't even need to be any good for things like taking a snap of a dog in a park on a modern camera. They're very good. You see that and you know that you're somewhere that's just been doing this for a while. It makes money doing it. You already have more confidence in the authority of what you're seeing. Same principle with your YouTube channel and the high quality setup. Same principle with my YouTube channel. The people have been like, I can't believe the production quality for your subscriber count. I genuinely thought you had 100K. I can't believe you've got 2.5. I see that comment all the time because I'm producing things to a higher standard. But I said to him anyway, the point about the camera was, I said, used, I could help you buy a camera for 500 quid with nice lenses, which is not much in the camera world. It's really not, but it's enough to get by to take dog pics and things. And I was like, if you change your mind and it was the worst mistake of your life, you bought it used for 500 quid, you go on eBay, you sell it for 500 quid and you lose 12% eBay fees. That was your risk, was, you know, 60 something pounds. It was nothing. On the other hand, every birthday, you know, holiday you go on, nice trip with friends, nice special evening with friends, whatever. Now you've got a really nice camera that you'll be more excited just to play with and capture life's memories beautifully with the camera. So if you can make it work for you for another reason, and you know that you can sell all this stuff has a used value, buy it all used in the first place, and there's not really much of a risk. I've bought things so cheap on eBay used that I've sold them a year and a half later for more than what I paid, and I've made 50 quid profit on using something for a year. So I don't see it as a big investment if you've got a good chance of getting the majority of it back.
How important do you think like thumbnails and titles are as well, of like your videos?
Yes. So
FYI, I'm letting you design the thumbnail, the thumbnail and the title for this podcast. Just letting you know that now.
Okay, mate. We'll give it a whirl and see what happens. So that's the funny thing. It was the thing I neglected most. It was the thing that if I look back, I should have twice as many subs as I have now, because, and it's the same mistake everyone makes, you've put all your time and your effort and your passion into the thing you've just shot and made and edited and put together. And then as it's uploading, it goes, have you got a thumbnail for this video? And you go, oh, got 40 minutes of the video uploading. I'll go grab a screenshot from it, or maybe I'll put a title over it. Yeah, that'll do. That's nice. Bang. You put that out. It's a rotter, and you don't even realize how to identify it's a rotter, because it looks good to you. It looks fine. And basically, the importance is your click-through rate and your average retention are kind of the two most important things on YouTube. It's your shop window is your thumbnail. Like, if you've got a shop window with a finger sticking up in it that says, we eat shit in here, no one's going to walk into your shop. And there's no point that you've decorated the inside of that shop amazingly with the best products in the world and you spent 10 hours editing it. It's bollocks. You've wasted your time. And I didn't really realize just how key it was. And I didn't realize how to identify if my thumbnail was good or not. Because to me, it looked like other nice ones on YouTube. I didn't want to do a lot of the cliches, like all the shocked faces and all that kind of crap and titles all screaming in caps. I just didn't want to tick off the cliches. I wanted to be, authentic.
We should do one together now.
Oh my God, how I lost 14 stone in a week. basically the way to find out is, it's called A-B testing in the marketing world, and it's very simple. You can work out A or B, which one did better. So you stick a thumbnail out for a little while, let's call it 3 days on YouTube, and you come back, set a calendar of reminder to do it. You come back, you look at your YouTube analytics, and you look at what your click-through rate was, they say that 6% is good. Like you can be happy with 6%, but I wouldn't be happier with too much lower. Maybe 5s fine. Anything below that, you need to sort it out. Good ones can be 9 or 10%, and if they're insane, they can be above that. You try a variation of it. You try, say, the slightly different picture, but the same wording written on it. See which picture got the most interest. Now you've realized that this one was way better. 7% click-through on this picture. 2.5%. Oh, my God. I've discovered that I've had videos out there for 6 months with 3%, 2.9, 3% click-through, which is shocking. And I've just wasted thousands and thousands and tens of thousands of people that could have clicked on the video didn't, because the thumbnail was shit, and I've thrown them in the bin now. The other thing about thumbnails generally, and my advice is, A, watch YouTube videos about how to do thumbnails, because they're in-depth topics and they're complicated and whatever else. But ultimately, you want a clear, short message, a hook, a question, a reason to go and watch that thing. Too many words, too much to read, and it doesn't really work so much typically. Don't keep spamming over here, more text over there, more text over here, diagonal, someone looking shocked, emoji over there. It just messes it up. But I find that I've had a clean, clear image of what the video is about. Perhaps even the emotive thing. I have tried it a couple of times just for lols to see what happened. You know, me like going, a screenshot of me going, like I was driving a fast car. It's a bit, I didn't like doing it, but I gave it a whirl. But then a kind of message that's just like, I don't know, the ultimate bargain car, ? Or like worth the risk? Or, you know, is it like worth getting this thing? Or I'm just trying to think whatever the other ones have been. My most recent one, would I do it again? 2.5 year review. So top part is nice, big and clear. Yellow text so you can see it. Little shaded background so that it really pops. Would I buy it again? Again in white or something. And then 2.5 year update below. And it doesn't have me in it. It doesn't have my brand logo. It's just the Mazda MX-5. Would I have done it again in hindsight? And then you've got an interesting hook and a question. And anyone who's got an MX-5 and is then thinking, oh, I've had this for 6 months. Will I like it in 2 years' time? What's this guy's experience like? And who's thinking of buying one? It's like, oh, we're going to get not an initial review, but we're getting someone who's really lived with this. And my title for this one was Falling In and Out of Love with the Mark III, or something like Falling In and Out of Love with the Mark III MX-5, something like that. And then 2.5 year update. And it's my best performing video in terms of click-through I've ever had. And it's at about 10% at the moment. And I literally put this out yesterday, last night, and it's had 600-700 views in a day. And the retention by a huge margin is the best I've ever had as well. My typical viewing time is between 6 and 6.5 minutes per video, which is better than average. But this one's on about 10 minutes as an average. Again, so it's absolutely nuts. Like, to me, I've never seen anything like it. So I would put time into these things, experiment with titles as well, but make sure you change one variable at a time. Because if you change the title and the picture, now you have no idea which one's helping you. So don't overcomplicate it. But then you'll start to get a feel for what works, and you can really surprise yourself, because the whole point of when you made that thumbnail in the first place is you thought this was going to get you good results. And I've been shocked time and time again, like, what? To me, that looks awesome. I'd click on that. Clearly the rest of the world disagrees because it's fucking tanking. But the dumbest thing I did was spend 8 hours, you know, half a day shooting a video, 8 hours editing said video, because I like to make it a bit of like watching a TV program. I like to put all the music and transitions and stuff in, and all that kind of jazz and graphics and things. I spent all this time editing, and I just forget about the thumbnail every time until I'm uploading. And then I'm like, oh, bollocks, got to think about that. I put something up, I get views, I get likes, I get comments, I get interaction. And I think of it as doing well because I'm satisfied. And I never went back to test it again. And then I've watched like a year later and I've gone, that did terribly. And what I did this summer was I spent 2 days rebranding every single thumbnail and rebranding every title. And I was like, I know how I should have done that now. Like, look at that video. That picture's so unclear. Like, what the fuck's going on in that picture? There's no tag. There's no interesting hook. It's not even that great a picture. I clearly did that one at 11:30 when I was tired. Anyway, I gave them all a go, and I literally doubled everything overnight. Like in 1 to 2 day period, I doubled everything. And that for me meant that my Google ad revenue, watch out baller, went from £60 a month, whoa, to £120 a month in a couple of days. And it stayed at that ever since because I updated all my thumbnail videos and I sat there, was like, fuck, this has been 2 years of crap thumbnails. And I've halved my revenue for the last 2 years of being monetized.
Think how much money you've missed out on.
I know. I could have a better microwave. I could have all sorts of shit. So definitely not to be... If anything, before you start a video, think of the title of the video before you start. That's the other mistake I've made. Is I've done the video review about said car. Now I'm thinking about the title again, not long before uploading it. And the fact that I've done this a few times in the early days, you think of that last, and yet that's the most important thing of why the video exists. That's the reason people are clicking. That's why they're going to watch to find out more. So the fact you think I've done this before, you think of it later, and it doesn't quite, it's a good hook for YouTube's sakes, but then the content doesn't perfectly answer that question or feel like it was around that to start with. And you lose people at the beginning. And that's my final point on actually the whys of YouTube is I would ask yourself at the beginning of YouTube whether you want to do it for entertainment's sake, just for fun. If you want to genuinely just entertain your audience and it's just like silly things, or if you want to help and educate people. Like when you work out why you're doing it, what your purpose is, and then you start thinking of content around what value does this genuinely bring to the person watching? Why would I recommend my video to a friend and expect them to watch till the end? When you start thinking a bit more about that, and you write down the things that people are probably going to want to know, then you come up into a video, whatever your topic is, it's just everything has so much more purpose and you flow and you get to the points quicker of what people want to know. And those are the videos that will do much better than I'm just going to talk out loud about my impressions of the car as and where we go. And then when I get home, I'm going to think of the title later. I'm going to make the thumbnail last minute and then I'm going to go out and just see how it does. And you're like, shock. It was totally average. Even if I put all the effort in everywhere else, you just need to think about it sometimes.
Yeah. Is there anything else you want to chuck in, by the way? Anything you want to cover or fire in? Because I've run out of sort of little points that I wanted to pull out of you, but there might be stuff that you want to pull in on your end.
Yeah, there's a few, actually. I haven't got many more to go because, funnily enough, we've covered most of them here. So the questions/points I'd written down was like, what have I learned and what would I recommend to others? Kind of feel like I've ticked off a lot of that. The degree of editing required, graphics, music, etc., and how much do they actually add? So this is interesting. And ultimately, storytelling beats all. It's all about story on YouTube if it's relevant to your thing. You don't need to be a good editor. And if you don't have the money for a good computer, then you could technically still get by on like your phone or a tablet or something, as long as you keep things quite simple and whatever your high quality source of audio is baked into your iPhone footage or your phone footage in the first place, and you don't have to sync things up later and you can do it on there. Great. But music is one of those things that it can really set the tone and pace and feel of the video. And it can make a drastic difference. And I've really enjoyed some of my videos where I got the music right. But there are other things where it was right for 2020, because that's what that's the kind of music that everyone was using on YouTube in 2020. And it's aged really badly now. And it's overdone and you've heard that style of music. And now it's aged. And I think it doesn't, in a way, I wish I'd thought ahead in some of these things. But I've edited to the beat and it's all a bit slicker and a bit cooler and stuff. But it takes time and it makes editing a video for fun and for passion, it makes it feel a bit like a job sometimes when you're editing a video you did for fun and effectively for free for a long time. You spend 7-8 hours editing. It's like, fucking hell, that took me several evenings in a row of doing 2 hours to get that done. And today's video that I put out, slash last night's, I wanted to experiment with not putting music on it at all. I wanted to experiment with not putting a flashy, without putting a flashy graphic title screens between interior, the drive, reliability, the verdict, you know, things that come up and separate and break things. This is a bit like my A-B test. I've only done the A. I've never done a B test. I've always done that. And I chickened out of doing it with the previous video. I was like, I can't do it. It needs music. This needs music. I'm going to do it. Well, all I've ever heard on the YouTube videos of mine, the very minority of people that would bother to mention at all, but you'll just get someone that says, I don't like the music. Because it's always not to someone's taste, or it has aged badly. And you go, yeah, to be fair, I don't know what I was thinking of that one. Or I still think it's all right. But if you don't put music, it doesn't age it, and you're not going to alienate a portion of the audience who don't like it. And also, if you're doing your storytelling right, you don't need music. If the video is engaging enough and you've got a really good hook to be there. And I get with the graphics thing, I thought it would feel a bit naked when I just would do a whip transition, like, whew, you know, into the next segment, like out talking around outside, talking about the faults of the design, blah, blah, blah. Then whew, now I'm sat in the car. Right, now we talk about the inside. No time wasted. Anyway, I thought this was kind of a real detriment, and I thought I'll just experiment. And as I say, I can't believe by such a huge margin how much better this video has done than my last 14 videos on YouTube. And yet it's the only one without music. It's the only one without graphics. And it was therefore the quickest one that I ever had to edit because I gave myself less work. And I was trying to work out why that was better. And I said to my brother and my dad, I was like, I didn't lead the witness, but I said, do you notice anything that's different? And they didn't, but they loved the whole pace feel. And I said, did you notice that I had no graphics and no music? And my brother was like, yeah, do you know why I really liked that? It's because when I'm on YouTube and the video is interrupted to tell me we're now going on to the next segment, that's subconsciously a point where I decide whether I'm going to bother or not with the next part of the video, and whether that's quite a good place to get out and change channels. Whereas if you just naturally move on and you now start talking about the interior, and now you've just made things interesting again because you're not talking about exterior design things you do or don't like, now you're talking about the interior and its features, you've suddenly piqued my interest again, but you didn't tell me there was a window for me to get up and walk out. And I thought that was a fascinating theory.
Yeah.
I'd never thought about that at all, but I thought, no, you're right, actually. And I looked at the YouTube channels that I like the most and that put out the most frequent content. And actually, most of them have given up with music and heavy things, like JM on cars. I spoke with him in person, really lovely guy. And we were bouncing YouTube stuff back and forth. And he said, once you get to a stage where if you do decide to treat it as a business, he said, once you get to the stage where you realize the money that's made in it, slash not, slash whatever, and that you realize that your business model is get as many videos out as you can, as long as they're high quality, you'll realize that you're wasting all your time and getting no returns on slowing yourself down with music and with all fancy stuff. Because you're going to have less videos for sponsors to come in and help you out because you only got out 2 videos that week, not 3, because you fannied around. And that I thought was really interesting because to me that felt like such a, I've always gone for quality over quantity. And that's why in 2 years I've done about 13 or 14 videos because I've always wanted it to be like, I'd rather you wait. And when I put something out, I think it's worthy of watching and I didn't just rush it for the sake of it. That's the other thing, just dispel the myth. Don't just keep putting out videos for the sake of it. Like, it doesn't impress the YouTube algorithm if you keep pumping out more shit that's not doing very well. So it is worth taking your time to a degree and getting your recipe right and learning from previous ones and asking people for honest advice. Send people private links, see what they actually think. People who are interested, not just your mum saying, oh, it's great. Or your best mate saying, yeah, it's sick. And they know nothing about the subject. And let's go, yeah, mate, it's sick. And it doesn't really give you anything.
I'll be all over your videos soon.
Well, mate, watch the most recent one, right? Watch the most recent one and then go back and watch one from the beginning or and then randomly from the middle. Yeah, I've been very surprised about which videos have done best sometimes. And it, ultimately, it's kind of taught me about the numbers, the audience, who actually like my beige Honda Civic should be the dullest car on the channel. It's the only non-sports car on the channel. It's a Honda Civic and it's beige, if I didn't mention that. It's automatic and it's from 2010. Like, you know, it's not special. But I was so impressed because it was just a daily car to get all my video gear to jobs and back, and I had to be reliable and practical and all that shit. You know, it was never to go on the channel. It was just to get the job done. But there's so many clever bits of Japanese Honda design that were just so genius with it. So many clever things that I was like, do you know what? I feel like I'm going to take a gamble and it's earned a place in the channel. I've always been about petrol heads and having fun and performance cars. Let's just give this a whirl. Well, that video, if I go to sort by popular, that was my most recent upload until yesterday, 6 months ago. Shows you how much I'm frequently putting out videos at the moment, not much. It's had 30,000 views. It's the fifth most watched video on the channel, and it's made me the third highest amount of Google ad revenue out of all of my videos. And it's a Honda Civic because it's what the people want. It's like best affordable daily. Get one that you can't believe you'll get these for anywhere between $1,000 and $5,000. They're fantastic. And there's so many more people looking for that stuff and actually want answers to these things than me doing a niche video about a run of Renault Megane's hot hatches where they only made 33 of each for the UK. And I thought that was going to be my big break on YouTube because they're two unicorns, both rarer than a LaFerrari each. You'll never see any of them on the road ever. I never have. You'll hardly even see them on a track day. And they're normally kept in garages as investment pieces because they just go up in value. And I got to drive two of them on the road back to back and compare these two unbelievably iconic hot hatches in all the car magazines. I honestly thought my channel was going to fucking blow up. It's done terribly in terms of views. It's still on 4,500 views a year later. And yet it has the second highest retention. It's got the highest likes. It's got the most comments for it. Like the people who have watched it loved it, but it was so niche that nobody watched it. It's really surprised me. It's a half an hour video, 26 minutes. I put so much effort into it. The music is epic. I did all these cool, edgy intros and stuff. And yet me doing a faster, easier video on a beige Honda Civic has got 30,000 in 6 months and has made me much more in ad revenue. And I get every single day I have comments on that video. So it's sometimes fun to just, you've got to be authentic to yourself, but it's good to work out how you as a channel can still add value to the people. Like that's something where I'm now not against the idea. If someone's got a good, sensible car, I've been saying no for 2 years to people go, would you want to do my Ford Mondeo? I'm like, nah, I haven't got time to drive a car I'm not interested in. But now if that car's got something about it and it's sensible and it's got an interesting niche or an interesting hook about it, or it's the best at that budget, then yeah, I'd like to give it a go, see what it's all
would
about.
Would you like to do my Mercedes 350 CLS?
Absolutely, I would. Absolutely. Sold. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, mate, that'd be class.
I bought it for $6,000, which is an absolute bargain. I got it with 53,000 miles, one owner.
What?
Yeah.
No way. What year is it again?
It's a 2010. So it's like the W219 or whatever kind of market model.
Hey, what a bargain. What an absolute bargain.
It was good.
When did you buy it? What year did you buy it?
I've had it for about a year now.
Okay. So you got it during COVID pricing, probably, but not at its most insane.
Yeah, basically. The guy was only selling it because he had it in London. It was, and obviously it's got ULEZ there, isn't it? And he was just like, I can't afford it to drive it because it's like costing me just to start it. It's like 15 quid or whatever out of his pocket. It was mental. But he when I say it was one owner, the guy before him owned it for a year and then he bought it. And then he's had it ever since. And honestly, it's so nice. And he bought the alloys for it, made in Germany and sent over. So like my wheels are like $4,000 just on their own. Fuck, it's like mental, you know? And I turned up and I saw it and I was like, yeah, okay. Like, yeah. And I tried to be like really cool, you know? I was like, yeah, it's all right, mate. I've got a couple of others to look at, but I knew that was the one, you know?
Did you walk away or did you buy it there and then?
Oh, I bought it there and then, yeah.
Yeah, like any sensible person would. I'm glad you didn't play that much of like the mind games with him where you're like, that's the one, but I'm going to walk away and play games.
No, it was literally, he wanted 6.5. So I went, I'll give you 5.5, mate. And he went, no, 6. And I went, yeah, all right. I was like, obviously.
Mate, I look forward to seeing it. Oh, by the way, I just remember one last thing I was going to say about anybody doing a YouTube channel. Mm-hmm. I know this is very hypocritical given that I go the long way about saying a short thing. But make videos shorter, right? And for example, I typically on a drive, all in, I often talk probably about 28 to 30 minutes of stuff, but it's about being brutal and working out, like going back to it over several days, watch it with fresh eyes again and work out, are you actually adding value to the person watching this right now? Are you telling them something compared to all the other info you've got? Does this make the top 30% of interesting things? Or so, top 70% of interesting things? No, it's in that kind of 30%. All right, it has to go. Because although it's technically unique and it's technically true, it's probably not worth hearing. And this is how you'll get a low, small number of like the average retention on a big ass video. And Google and YouTube's not going to like that because they want to put 3 ads in your video. And if everyone's bailing 4 minutes in, like you're not a good business partner for them, essentially.
Mm.
Like that's the way they would look at it. And I watched a video. I can't remember how to find it, but if you search for something, you would. There's an editor. It's like if you're talking like 1 billion views editor or something like that, right? You'll find the editor for Logan Paul. And he's this nerdy guy, but he clearly is like an outrageous editor. And he knows about, he just knows everything about attention and mystery and intrigue and blah, blah, blah. And he will make 4 hours of footage sent to him about Logan Paul's day, and he'll turn it into a 3-minute video. And he just cuts to the point and keeps things interesting and fast. I don't watch Logan Paul's YouTube channel because the guy's a prick. But, you know, when you watch an example and you see him talking it through, you're like, wow, this guy's outrageous. And he's like, you just have to be kind of quite vicious with your cuts. So I sit there and think, have I made a rough point like this in the past in this video? Yes. Also, if I've gone, let's say I'm saying something I'm making a point about the steering over 5 sentences. Once I've made the point that the steering's gorgeous and you get the idea, and I have had a certain level of specifics to it, at the nearest convenience, even if it's good, I'll cut the rest. It's time to go on to something else, even if there was more to say about it. And all these things add up as well, like how much time you'll save. And the more you can make it a 12-minute video, more likely someone's just going to see it till the end if they're at 8 minutes anyway. If they've got another 20 to go, they're not going to be arsed with it. That was the most useful thing I learned from A, other big editors on YouTube, and B, from early days mates looking at my videos first and just saying it's good, but it's still 22 minutes. You need to try and get that down.
Fuck knows what I'm going to do with this boy. 1 hour and 30.
Fuck knows. Shit. Soz, mate.
No, I don't mind. I always go for long format. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't care.
Yeah, well, this is the nice thing. Like a podcast, I think, is a bit different, and hence why I haven't been trying to do anything as short as possible. Because I feel like, again, I feel like the people watching this, anyone who's bothering to watch this all the way through is either a friend, hi mum, or or it's actually somebody who's interested in starting a YouTube channel and has always had it at the back of their mind. There's a passion, but they're, you know, they're unsure. And I feel like it'd be useful. It would have been useful for me to have someone condense, even into an hour, all the stuff I've watched for 20 hours on this stuff to try and cram it in. You think just useful random little nuggets. But if anyone's still here, I couldn't recommend doing it more, because we've all got an interest in something. Even if you just want to comment and open discussions about something you don't scientifically know the answers about, you know, if you just want to be part of a community and just share enthusiasm about something, ask for the viewers' thoughts on stuff. It's just a really nice place to be, that like your niche interest, there's always a community of people. Like, there are literally middle-aged women out there who do things on crafting and knitting and random little things, but they have a really focused, sweet audience of people just like them who love that. Great. Like, why not? And in the end, they end up monetizing it, which is a nice bonus for doing something that makes you happy. And I think it leads elsewhere. I think as a person, it makes you happier and less stressed when you've got really nice creative distractions from what just life and just sitting on and watching another evening of Netflix. You know, a friend of mine basically is an accountant for some of the biggest places in London, like the Big Four. And he's an amazing accountant. You know, accountants have the stereotype of being boring, and you know that accountancy must be really boring to listen to and talk about. Well, he decided to do a YouTube channel. What the why? Because when I said to you about entertainment or education or helping people, he just wanted to do, I wish these were the things that 21-year-old me learnt and heard from future me. And I know for a fact there's buttloads of 21-year-old fresh-faced grads who are going to go through some very grueling years and some very tricky times and will maybe fluff an interview that they were otherwise good enough for. I'm the guy who sits on the other side doing the interviews. I know what I'm looking for, but I never knew what I was looking for when I was the other guy. You know, so it's like, it's actually a really nice place of wellness to come from. And following my advice, you know, I said it takes, again, an average of 100 videos to get monetized. And it takes an average of 4,000 watch hours. I taught him everything, editing, camera gear, helped him through with storytelling a lot, really. But genuinely, he's fantastic. He spoke so naturally on camera anyway, because he's done lots of presentations and stuff. So he was really watchable and great straight away. But I think he got monetized in 12 videos. He had his 1,000 subs, all his watch hours. Mm-hmm. And likewise, he makes I know in the past anyways, you know, he's been about the same as me, about 100 quid a month in ad revenue or whatever. And he's done private tuition for really nice YouTube followers who've been like, would you mind if we jumped on Zoom for 2 hours and I'll pay you a couple of hundred quid? I'd just love to like go through with you before my interview in 2 days. And he's found it the most rewarding thing ever, like helping nice people in his position years ago. And then they've like messaged him like, mate, I got the job. Thank you so much. And you think, you'd never have told, if you're at the pub and a mate's like an accountant, he goes, I think I might do a YouTube channel accounting. I don't think many people would encourage it or realize what nice impact it was going to go on to have. And who would you put first as a natural presenter for YouTube? An accountant? Like, no, but he's not a boring person at all. He's one of the people that clearly doesn't sit in that trend of being dull. But it just, it's amazing where it goes, how rewarding it is. And he said, like, at the time, like, this is just, it's so creative, the fun of sticking the YouTube edit together with the music and the sound effects and the cutting and all this stuff. And he's just like, I absolutely love it. I sit there with a glass of wine. I have such a great time. It makes me really happy. And it's the most, like, it's nice giving something back and just seeing people being positively affected. Which is why I encourage everyone to do a YouTube channel. I think it can be a really good distraction from life.
Thank you for your time, bro. I really appreciate all the knowledge you've shared.
You're very welcome, mate. I'm sorry that I've just done a twice the length of usual.
I don't mind, mate. You know me. I enjoy it. I enjoy listening to you talk.
Bless you. Bless you, mate.
Said.
Bless you. Bless you, mate. Well, mate, let me know if you want any help or whatever with the channel, or if you ever want like any little, not that sounds so fucking arrogant, you know, but if there's anything you do want a second opinion on, mm-hmm. let me know. would always be happy to throw an idea in. But mate, I think you're smashing it. And I think go you for doing it for as long as you have and just following your passion of doing it and having the fun of talking to interesting people and me.
Yeah, you're interesting, bro. You've got a good story. I like it. I like the vibe and the petrol poodle.
Bless you, mate.
Where can people find you, like socials and that? Obviously, I'll put the links in the description below anyways, but it's good for them to know.
Ah, yes. Well, you will see some very empty social media accounts. They are in existence, but I haven't taken them seriously at all. But Petrol Poodle on Facebook, or Petrol Poodle, just at Petrol Poodle on Instagram. And the YouTube handle is, if you were to go to, frankly, if you type Petrol Poodle into YouTube, you'll find it now. But if you weren't, then it's like youtube.com/@PetrolPoodle 6617, the random numbers they apply to the end of it.
And if you've got any really nice cars, hit my guy up so he can give you some solid reviews. All right, if anyone's made it this far.
Or really average dull ones. Beige are good.
Yeah, why not? I'll chat to you off stream anyways for a few minutes if you're all right with that.
Yeah, of course.
Cheers for coming on again. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, everybody. Thank you, mate.